This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here again to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, give us a call now at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your calls, some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes, vitamin D. Is it hype? Is it real? How much should you actually take? Where is the data? Is it a great vitamin for adults? We know it's important for kids when they grow up to keep them from getting rickets. But what about adults? D is hot. Mm-hmm. Is it real?
And?
Is it real? We're going to also talk about diabetes, sort of what's going on with type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes. Why do we lump them together? And what do the type 1 people think of the type 2 people?
Okay, a recipe.
The recipe is something that we've had requests for over the years. It's spinach and pear salad. You will love it. It's a recipe from the vault.
Okay.
And we've had requests from the vault recipe. I think it's a wonderful recipe that you, Tom, might especially like.
Okay, looking forward. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, let's welcome a caller now in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. How can we help you?
Yeah, I hurt my back. I've got a history of back injury, and I hurt my back just the other week just by simply bending and twisting. Wasn't holding anything or anything like that. And I have a tendency to like to go to the park and hang upside down on the monkey bars when I hurt my back. Is that good for it, like getting some kind of decompression going to it?
Does it seem to help you?
It does.
Mm-hmm. Tell me how you do that. I mean, I've seen, you know, we all know there are these back compression things.
See,
I
want to know how you get up on the monkey bars and then you put your legs over and you
yeah, but I mean that's a harder thing to do, isn't it? You've been playing with monkey bars since you've been a kid, I take it?
No, not really. But it just seems like something that I wanted that would feel good by hanging upside down there.
I think it's like riding a bicycle, Zorba.
You mean once you do it, you can do it forever?
You know how to do it.
Do you hang upside down on the monkey bars?
Well, if I wanted to, I could.
You're going to take two bath towels with you to fold them up and tuck them up under your knees because you're not 5 pounds anymore.
You see, that's exactly. See, I knew as an adult, you've got to do things differently.
Kids don't do that.
Yeah, they don't put towels underneath their knees. They just kind of jump around and do that. The answer is yes. For many people, that can be very, very useful for the back. There, if you stay up late at night like I do at times and watch some of the infomercials, they're infomercials for a variety of back products where you essentially put your feet in and then you twist a couple of bars and you're hanging upside down and you've got a homemade monkey bar at your house for only, $1,000 or $2,000. But now the real issue is, what does it actually do for the back? We know that lots and lots of back pain is caused by muscular problems. Other things are caused by discs. So you've had back problems. You said, I don't know, when did they start? How old were you when they began, and how old are you now?
I'm 40 now, and I originally heard it when I was like 19.
Okay, so you heard it in an accident, car accident, auto accident?
Horsing around, actually.
Just horsing around. Okay. So you probably have, if you actually were to look at your disc, you might have a little disc problem somewhere in your back. And so you've got this disc that pushes on a nerve. The nerve causes problems. It causes pain. One of the things we do when we do that is try to decompress that disc. And hanging upside down is a great way of doing it because it sort of stretches out the disc and also stretches out some of the ligaments that may cause the pain.
Yeah, but it isn't a permanent fix, obviously, because he's having back problems as we talk.
Well, there's not actually a permanent fix for most people with back problems. It's not as if you go in and you say, oh, I'm going to fix the back and take care of the disc, because a lot of back surgery is failed surgery. And the reason is this can come and occur at any particular time. So you can fix one and then the other one bothers you. So unless you have neuropathic pain, that is pain that goes down your feet into your legs, that's sharp and knife-like, is your pain in your back or in your feet or in your legs?
It's in my back. It's in your lower back. Like, back. In the
lumbar area.
In your lumbar area. So it may be a little arthritis. It may be a little disc disease. It may be a little what we call facet problems. The main thing is, if this works for you, I would do that. It's sort of, if you will, it's almost chiropractic manipulation, which you are doing to yourself. We know that when you push on these, on the facets, which are basically sort of the ridges in our back, it can make a big difference. So I would continue with that. The other thing we know that's really good to keep it up is making sure you do some regular stretching exercises. And a physical therapist, a good chiropractor, a trainer will show you how to do this. And that can often keep this from recurring. Take care. Good luck. Stretching exercises and enjoy the monkey bars. Just make sure that it doesn't, that you don't do it in a dangerous way.
All right. Will do. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call. Dangerous way meaning falling on your head.
Well, not using the towels. But I just thought about something. We ought to take a picture of you, Tom, on the monkey bars and put it up on the website.
Oh,
would you
cool.
be willing to do
oh,
that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to have to buy.
Can we wait until spring?
Until springtime before we actually do it, absolutely.
1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. A listener joins in now, Zorba, from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I'm calling. I actually have a two-part question, mm-hmm. and it's about scoliosis. The first part is about my husband. He's had scoliosis his whole life, and when he was young, the doctors told him that he would be crippled by the time he was 30. But his dad did a lot of intensive Tai Chi with him, and so he's 33 now, and he's walking around fine. But he started recently to have a lot more back pain, and I was wondering what he could do for that. Should we go to a chiropractor, or should he do Tai Chi, or what kind of things do you suggest for that?
Now, scoliosis, Zorba, is curvature of the spine.
Curvature of the spine. Mm-hmm. One of the curvatures of the spine. So I want to go back to that first doctor. So the doctor said, I mean, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. You're going to be crippled by the time you're 30. Yeah, well, it certainly didn't sound like that was the best physician to go to, because you'd look and say, what could I do? And so his dad said, wait a minute, we're going to do Tai Chi. So the dad was bright and the doctor was
wrong.
Yeah. That's right. The dad was right. The doctor was wrong. A lot of people do quite well with scoliosis as long as they keep up. As long as they keep their weight right, they do stretching exercises, and they keep their strength up. And I've got a good example. I had a woman in my office who never had an x-ray at all, never knew she had scoliosis, 55 years of age, working in a convenience store, and slipped and fell and hurt herself. And we took an x-ray, and I looked at her spine, and I said, holy cow! I mean, she had the biggest scoliosis. She had a huge S in her spine. And I looked, and she had five kids, by the way. No trouble with the babies. Yeah. Never had back pain before. And I said, you know, did you ever know that you had this terrible scoliosis? And she said, what's that? What's that? And I showed her a spine, and she said, holy cow. She said the same thing I said. So a lot of people walk around with scoliosis and don't have pain. And the reason is stretching exercises like Tai Chi, proper weight and strengthening. And
hanging from the monkey bars?
If it works, yeah. Hanging from the monkey bars, if it works, as our last caller did, it helped for the back pain. Anything that does stretching is really good. So tell me about the pain. It started restarting and getting worse for him?
Well, we just moved, and so I suppose it might be him not wanting to carry boxes in, but he's been complaining more when he carries our daughter. She's about 23 pounds now.
Okay.
And then just carrying things in his arms, he's been complaining about back pain.
What I would recommend is strengthening exercises for the arms and shoulders, by the way. That would be very good. Doing some weight exercises to build up your deltoids and your biceps and the shoulder girdle muscles. Very important, because you don't want to just lift with your back. You want to lift with your shoulders, and of course you want to lift with your legs. So I'd recommend that he go to a trainer and look at some exercises that he can do to strengthen his legs and strengthen his arms, as well as stretching exercises for the back. The idea is to try to get the back to do the least amount of work when you're actually lifting your daughter, because your daughter is only going to get bigger in size, and of course she wants to be with daddy. Good luck, and going back to Tai Chi is a great idea.
You said you had two questions. Have we answered them both?
The second one was about my daughter, because I think scoliosis is hereditary, and so I was wondering how soon I can know if she has scoliosis or not, and what I can do to help make sure that she isn't disabled by it? Or
well, there is a hereditary component to scoliosis. Bringing her to your doctor, mentioning that, often you can tell scoliosis, very much so, without an x-ray, often by just looking at the spine, bending over and looking to see whether or not the spine is safe. But scoliosis often occurs during the rapid growth rate of puberty. So it's really around adolescence that you tend to see it. Is there anything you can do about it? Not that I know of, other than what your husband did. Stretching exercises, you know, are extremely important for it. But the hereditary component is sort of secondary. I mean, it's also hit and miss. So she's not necessarily going to get it, but you're going to want to mention it to your doctor in terms of her family history.
Just don't go to that same doctor you went to.
That's right. Stay away from that doctor. Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. And thank you very much for calling.
We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, you mentioned you're going to talk some about vitamin D. I thought the jury was in on vitamin D, and it's absolutely a good thing for us to take.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, the jury is not in on vitamin D. But we do know, since a study that we talked about several years ago, that we know that people with low vitamin D levels have more fractures, have more cancer, have more heart disease, and have more stroke. We know that. The real issue is we don't know why. We don't know if it's
more stroke,
heart disease, more cancer. A cancer being the big issue, probably 10 or 20% higher rate of cancer with low vitamin D levels. But we don't know if low vitamin D levels are the result of a metabolic problem in the body. In other words, you have low vitamin D levels because of other things that are going on. Mm-hmm. Or is vitamin D really the answer to this? In other words, if we take in vitamin D, is it going to make a difference?
It could be coincidental.
Absolutely. Because these are observational studies. In other words, there were no studies 5 years ago of 20,000 people. And there's studies now out there that are doing this where people took vitamin D. Why? Because vitamin D was the cool, was not a hot vitamin. It wasn't like vitamin C. Vitamin C is what I call a hot vitamin. Let's do research on C. It's great. Yeah. How about beta carotene? Let's do research on beta carotene. It's great. How about selenium? Hey, let's do research on selenium. How about vitamin E? Hey, let's do research on vitamin E. These are kind of like the vitamin du jour. And all those other vitamins, frankly, didn't pan out to be worthwhile. So D might be in that class. On the other hand, it might not be in the class. It might be that D is good for us. So the bottom line for me is I take vitamin D because I don't know. And I know we don't get enough vitamin D in a multivitamin. We only get 400 units. And the Institute of Medicine, which is a very renowned institute, has said the Fed should increase that as a minimum daily requirements probably to 1,000 units. So my recommendation to everybody, take your 1,000 units of D. It's cheap. It's inexpensive. Don't even get your vitamin D levels measured at your doctor's office. And if it's wrong, well, then you spent a little money on vitamin D.
I take 2,000 units a day.
Just fine.
And it's D3, which you like better than D for some reason.
Well, D3 is the vitamin that is usually manufactured, and it turns out to be D3 is the one that is best absorbed. So when you're looking on the label 95% of the time now, it's going to say vitamin D3, which is also called cholecalciferol, but D3 is kind of easier to remember. And again, Tom brings up a good point. 1,000 or 2,000 units, that's when they're manufactured, are fine. Greater than 5,000 units, you run a risk of vitamin D because it's a fat-soluble vitamin, so 1,000 to 2,000, perfect.
1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we welcome a listener in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, this is Mike from St. Louis, as you said.
Yeah, how can we help?
All right, I have a very interesting question that hopefully you can help me with. Mm-hmm. I've never had a definite answer. When I was around, I'd say maybe 10 years old, maybe a little younger, I was really sick, had a high fever, had some sort of crazy dream, probably combination hallucination, and where things were moving really fast, a lot of, like, loud noises, things rushing around. But ever since then, and it's become more and more infrequent as I've gotten older, I've kind of had that same feeling come back. And it's not when I'm sleeping, it's when I'm awake. Often when I'm in a quiet place, a quiet room, maybe even, you know, in bed trying to go to sleep. And kind of that this feeling is sort of a feeling of, like, everything is moving around me at, like, a really fast speed, but I can tell that things aren't moving fast. It's very strange. You know, if people talk to me, it sounds like they're talking with a sense of urgency, but I can tell that they're not, you know, freaking out.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, how old are you now?
I'm 22 now.
Does it get in the way of activities, driving or anything like that?
No, because it's really only, you know, when I'm like, you know, just sort of chilling when I'm resting.
Huh.
And it's also often accompanied with, like, sort of a loss of perspective, maybe, like things in the room start looking small, or like my room sort of closing around me, or like the clock next to my bed looks really far away. Hmm. It's very strange.
You know, it's interesting. It sounds like an Alice in Wonderland experience as I'm listening to you.
And I actually started doing a little research on it because I was curious. And that's the one thing that people kept mentioning, a syndrome called Alice in Wonderland syndrome.
Oh, so what'd you find out when you did some research on the net?
Yeah, I literally just Googled, stuff moving in my head fast, strange feeling, because I didn't really know what to search.
Sure.
And I came across a message board with a bunch of people talking about the same thing. And that was one of the things I was mentioning was Alice in Wonderland experience, but I feel like that only explains half of my problem.
Well, there are a couple of things that often happen. First of all, we have reveries. And reveries, a reverie sort of position in your brain is something that occurs between wakefulness and sleepfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And some people actually can go to a state or at a state where they have they're conscious in sleep, but they don't have total control over that. So they have these states that are sort of semi-conscious states. Now, just to go on that for a second, semi-conscious states are often drug-induced states. So if you look, for instance, at the Rime of the Ancient Mariner or Xanadu, and you look at Coleridge, who wrote it, it really was a drug-induced state. It was an opium-induced state into the semi-induced state. But it doesn't have to be that way. People actually have that often on their way to or from sleep, where they're in half a dream state and have a variety of situations happen. And that's why Tom had a good point. Does it happen while you're driving? That's a totally different thing. So this seems to happen when you're chilling out and resting, right?
Yes.
Right. No drug involved, correct? Or drugs
no,
aren't?
No, okay. Drugs involved.
Okay. I mean, well, you got to ask the obvious. Yeah. Especially in some places, you have to say, are there drug involved? So there's no drug involved. This is a reverential state. It's often a reverie state. Now, there's another aspect. Is this discomforting to you? Are you anxious? Does your pulse race? Do you feel like the world is collapsing in front of you and something awful is going to happen?
Yeah, not really, because at least maybe when I was younger, I don't really remember, but now it only happens maybe once a year at most, and I know I can get rid of it.
It's
either by turning the TV on or going and talking to someone real quick.
Because the other side is the panic disorder, and panic disorder is completely different. Fast pulse, sweating, feeling like the world is dropping out, dropping out in front of you, terrible situation going to happen. Fear that is often involved that. So we can take the panic disorder part. You are basically in a reverie type state. And this is something that occurs and tends to disappear, by the way, as you get older.
Now, do you think, Zorba, that his 10-year-old experience was the first experience of a series, or was that a causal effect?
Oh, I don't think it was a causal effect. I don't think so. I think it just happened. Kids often get into these semi-referential states.
Mm-hmm.
This is the type of state that you're in. So it's going to happen on your way to sleep, mm-hmm. and the reality is you talk to other people to wake yourself up, and that's okay, and there's nothing wrong with it.
All right. I appreciate it.
Well, take care.
Thanks so much for the call. Yeah. Now I want to know, Zorba, in which places this condition is more likely to be drug-induced? I'd like you to name those places for us.
And that's the rest of the story.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And before we break, Zorba, let's take a quick question from the Zorba Pastor in Your Health inbox and see if we can help out Gail in Brownsville, Wisconsin. Gail is 68 and battling a torn meniscus in her left knee. She writes, "Recently, I've been using a treadmill, but yesterday we went to our local Sears store to look at new treadmills, and they had an elliptical that didn't take up any more space than my treadmill. I tried it and liked it, so we bought it. Now, I'm wondering if the elliptical is going to be harder on my knees or better than the treadmill. What do you think?"
Oh, I think ellipticals are great. I think they're really good on the treadmill. First of all, I hope she tried the elliptical to see what it felt like, because you always have to actually do the action.
Yeah, she said she did.
Did the action. She liked it. They're very gentle on the knees. They're better than pounding on the treadmill. Most people who go on treadmills walk, after the age of about 25. People 25 and younger tend to run on the treadmill. But ellipticals are great. They're great on the knees. They move the arms, move the legs. They're probably the best thing for the joints. They're an expensive piece of machinery versus a treadmill. Treadmills are often much cheaper than ellipticals, but I think ellipticals are great. They're as good as bikes on the knee. They are safe. use it, and enjoy it.
And let me assure you that sending an email to the show is safe for all knees. So send them to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a recipe coming up, lots more of your calls, some interesting research to talk over, and our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But right now it's recipe time, Zorba. And as you know, from time to time, we like to dig back into our archives and highlight a past recipe from the show in a segment we call Recipes from the Vault. Today's recipe for spinach and pear salad dates back to 2003. It was requested by Ann in Madison, Wisconsin, who was bummed when she recently decided to make it and had lost her copy. Well, fear not, Ann, because here it is again, spinach and pear salad.
Fear not. I love it. Recipe from the Vault. Fear not. It reminds me of Shock Theater when I was in Chicago as a kid. We watched it at 10 o'clock at night, and there were the horror films.
Yeah.
The Vault.
Yeah. Jack Benny used to go down to the Vault to get his money.
That's right.
Go down the stairs, and there was some guy down there that had never seen the light of day that was guarding his. Anyway, let's do the recipe.
I think our Vault is the hard disk, frankly. That's what our Vault is.
Okay.
The Vault. And if we lose it, we've just lost the name and can't search for it. So spinach and pear salad. Mm-hmm. So why even think about this? Well, the reality is, you know, salads are wonderful. They're great. And often we get into this pattern of eating the same type of salad all the time. So I think it's really important to think about greens and nuts. And the reason why it's nice to pair them together is that nuts have omega-3 fatty acids, which are good for us. Mm-hmm. Nuts are caloric dense, but they've got the good type of fat in them. And there's good fat and bad fat, frankly. Mm-hmm. Omega-3 fatty acids from nuts, not peanuts, but real nuts, mm-hmm. from fish turn out to be very good. And, of course, spinach is wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, Popeye knew it was wonderful. But the reason why you can say it's wonderful is that the darker the color, the more the micronutrients.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at celery and iceberg lettuce, it doesn't have a lot of micronutrients.
Yeah.
You look at spinach or kale, something that is a dark green, it has more micronutrients.
Yeah. And this is spinach and pear. That was a good pun, by the way, when you said pair them together.
Yeah, I thought that was good. I was trying to see if you caught that up.
Yeah.
Okay, so start out with 3 tablespoonfuls of olive oil, extra virgin, which is the best.
Mm-hmm. 3 big tea olive oil.
Juice of 1 large lemon, freshly squeezed. Only use a fresh juice. If you're going to use juice that's prepared before, frozen juice is okay, but it does not compare in the taste to fresh juice.
Not real lemon.
Right. The reconstituted real lemon.
Sure.
3 medium pears, fresh, washed, sliced into quarters.
3 medium pears, fresh, washed, and sliced into quarters.
Yeah. Now, what kind of pear? Do you like Bartlett pears? What kind of pears do you like?
Yes.
Yeah. I happen to like pears. Pears are really good.
And I think Bartlett are better.
Yeah. I happen to like Bartlett, but pears are good. A 15-ounce bag of fresh spinach, and if you've got some red lettuce leaves, that's great, but a 15-ounce bag of fresh spinach for sure.
15-ounce bag of fresh spinach, and you can get red lettuce leaves.
Yeah. It's kind of nice. Makes it look good. And 3/4 cup of toasted pecan halves.
3/4 cup of toasted pecan halves.
That's right. And we are going – wait a minute. I said pecan. You said pecan.
Yeah.
Are you from the South?
No. Are you?
No, I'm not from the South okay. either. That's exactly it. So what are we going to do with the pecans? So first of all, you're going to sprinkle these pecans on a nonstick baking sheet. Bake it. That's how you're going to toast it. Bake it at 350 for 10 minutes. Stir it occasionally. So you kind of open up the oven and move it around. And then basically what you're doing is drying out those pecans. And they taste toasted. They're much, much better. Then, in a small sauté pan over medium heat, mix the olive oil and lemon juice. Warm it, but do not boil it. And then in a bowl, what you want to do is mix the pears, spinach, toasted almond, and pecan halves. Pour in the lemon and olive oil mixture over that. Mix it all up together. Refrigerate it until chilled, about 2 hours, and serve it.
Yeah.
It's refreshingly delicious.
Yeah. It's a salad.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Salad that you can make before, but it's refreshingly delicious.
So you can have it with a meal, whatever
the meal. You can have it with a meal, right. Exactly. Or you could have it with some soup. I mean, one of the whole goals in our society is to try to cut down on calories. This is 213 calories. This is incredibly cheap from a caloric point of view, and it tastes good, and it has crunch. Mm-hmm. And it's healthy. It's got lots of vitamins in it. It's got 20% of the fiber you need for the whole day. Try it. It's a recipe from – can I do it?
Sure.
From – the Vaughn.
Yeah. And since it's so good for you, you can serve it with some kind of high-caloric meal. Sort of get
like
even.
Like fried chicken.
Thanks, Anne, for the trip down recipe memory lane. And again, if there's a recipe you remember but can't find, or there's one you feel deserves an encore performance, let us know what it is, and it might end up being our next recipe from the vault. Just send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba at WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
Let's get back to the phones now at 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Here's a listener, Zorba, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, the question is, my daughter about 2 years ago was diagnosed with acid reflux. And she's been seeing a specialist, and he's a real good doctor, and he prescribed the Zantac. And she had been on that twice a day, and it had been working real well. And then I guess probably about, 3 weeks ago, the symptoms came back really strong, and she was having some problems associated with the acid reflux again that the Zantac had taken care of. So we were watching a commercial one night, and we saw Prevacid. She went and took that about the very next day, and then it cleared up. So my question is that something that folks with acid reflux have to deal with after a while? The medication kind of becomes ineffective, and you have to try something else.
Yeah, well, the doctor will certainly answer your question. I can, as an acid reflux sufferer, give you the lay perspective. It's really a pain in the neck, I guess almost literally, and it takes, for me anyway, forever to relieve the symptoms, and I don't know personally whether I'm ever going to get rid of it. I've never had it in my life and got it a few months ago, and it's really, really, really problematic.
Yeah, and it turns out to be pretty common. What kind of symptoms does your daughter have?
Well, Zorba, the main one that really bothers her a lot, and, she's an athlete.
She's how old now?
She's 17 now.
17.
It first flared up when she was around 15, and that's the same time we diagnosed her with lactose, as being lactose intolerant also.
Okay.
But she gets this, she says it's kind of like in her throat, and it's kind of like she can't swallow, and, she plays basketball, it's real hard to breathe, and just feels like something's stuck in her throat all the time. That's the one that really bothers her, quite a bit.
Right. And acid reflux, as Tom said, can be very bothersome. In fact, the person who invented the concept behind drugs such as Zantac and Prevacid are different drugs. But that person got the Nobel Prize a number of years ago who developed this concept. And the Nobel Prize Committee cited that he probably reduced suffering in more people than anything else that had been discovered ever in time. Because when people have terrible acid reflux and ulcers and all types of acid disease, nothing gets rid of the pain. Morphine doesn't get rid of the pain. Maalox, a drug we used to use, will not get rid of the pain and so on. And it turns out it's very common. So how do we treat it? First of all, Zantac is a good drug, and it works a lot of time for people and will work well. And what it does is it blocks the receptor, but the acid keeps on being produced. And it basically blocks the receptor, so it in some way it reduces the way the receptors react to Zantac. If we look at omeprazole, which is Prilosec, or Prevacid, which is the other drug on the market that's over the counter, or the purple pill, which is not stronger at all than these, but is much more expensive, the purple pill, Nexium. If we look at those, these are called proton pump inhibitors, and they work differently. And they are, for many people, much more effective than Zantac. So for your daughter, it works well. I would stay on it the way they work. The best way they work is in the morning. You take it in the morning before you eat because it shuts off the acid for the day, and that's the most likely way that it'll work for it. But for some people, they have to take Zantac at bedtime because it basically blocks the receptors at night, which for many people are very problematic. You produce acid in your stomach at night, and you're not eating. So for some people, it's nighttime stuff. So yeah, I would just use over-the-counter Prevacid. It's a good drug. It was one of the major drugs that was prescribed until it became over-the-counter just a while ago.
Does your daughter have to change her diet?
Yes, she does. And that's the hardest thing.
You know, it is. Here it is, and you correct me if I'm wrong. Fatty foods, no. Acidic things, no. Spicy foods, no. Anything you'd like to eat, no.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But for some people, if they just take their pills or double the dose they're supposed to, they can continue to sin.
That's my method.
They can continue to sin with the diet. But the reality is it can be diet related. But for many people, they don't have to change their diet except for some things. Alcohol is also an issue.
Oh, alcohol. That's right.
Alcohol is a big issue. Yeah. Caffeine. Eating after 6 o'clock at night. We'll put on our website, zorbapastor.org, the GERD, the gastroesophageal reflux diet. Mm-hmm. We'll put a link in it on our website at zorbapastor.org so you can look at the things that you can do from a dietary point of view. But for many people, diet is not enough. Yeah. It's either a proton pump inhibitor, over-the-counter, Prevacid or Prilosec. Generic is just as good as name brand. And if they don't work, then you go to Zantac or the combination of both.
All right. Well, that helps.
Yeah. Good luck to you.
Okay. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering if Zantac works, why my doctor gave me that other stuff.
You'll just have to ask him when he's off the show.
800, pay the bill. 800-462-7413.
Wait a second. Did you say pay the bill?
1-800-462-7413. Nothing's free except advice from Zorba to you here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before we step away, let's see if we can help out Susan in St. Louis, Missouri. It appears Susan's son, who's a fan of our show as well, has a concern with his eyes. Susan says, "Sadly, I passed on the genes that are responsible for my 19-year-old son's red-green color deficiency. He researched online and found a $9,000 corrective lens for this problem. I am skeptical. If this color correction is possible, then why haven't I heard about it on NPR? He has agreed to listen to you and not his exceptionally intelligent mother."
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, $9,000 to correct it. I don't think so. I don't think it's not a lens issue. It's an issue essentially of – it's a receptor issue and how the receptors are actually working in the eye. It's not a function that you can actually change with a lens. And besides, $9,000 will correct this. There's no other treatment that's out there, not standard by a doctor. Sounds a little fishy to me. I think I'd save your money and take it and use it somewhere else.
When it comes to advice, it's hard to argue against an exceptionally intelligent mother, but Zorba's a decent second option. So send your questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your questions coming up. We have some interesting research to talk over at our Medical Mythbuster right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from, that's right, PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, interesting, I think, we talk about diabetes. The type 1 diabetes people are a little unhappy about being lumped in with the type 2 diabetes.
That's people. Right. That's right. The type 1s are upset. They're up in arms and they go, we don't want to be with the type 2 people. Yeah. And the type 2 people don't care because, hey, they're 95% of the diabetic population.
Yeah. Well, I don't think most of us even know really what the distinction
that's
is between
exactly.
type 1 and type
2. One used to be called juvenile diabetes and the other one used to be called adult onset diabetes. Juvenile diabetes, which is type 1 generally, are people who cannot make insulin. And if they don't have insulin, they die. Period. They die.
Yeah.
And that's the when Banter and Best years ago, back in the 30s, discovered insulin, they basically discovered a drug that saved these young people who were dying. And it's an autoimmune disease. We develop antibodies to the islet cells in our pancreas that produce insulin. We no longer produce it. We need injections.
And type 2 is?
Totally different. Type 2 generally is insulin is produced in the pancreas, but it's not as much as we need. And that's usually lack of exercise, obesity, poor lifestyle puts up what we call insulin resistance, and over time the body cranks up the insulin. It does less and less, you know, because the amplification is sort of down. And as a result, sometimes people need pills that'll work. Sometimes they need insulin, but they produce it. They're not the same as the type 1 people. And so advocacy groups, among other things, are up in arms because they're really two different diseases.
They don't want to be lumped in with the type
Not at all.
Issues.
Not at all. Now, you might think that this is a minor issue, but it isn't. It's a major issue. First of all, people think, hey, you're a diabetic. It's your fault. You're slothful. You're lazy. Yeah. You're not doing a good job. And so the type 1 diabetics are lumped in with the type 2 diabetics. For many of them, it's a lifestyle issue. Not for all of
they
them.
They want a different name for their
Well,
disease?
They'd like to have a different name. They don't want to be called type 1 diabetics. I mean, I'm not sure. They're looking for the name change because it's diabetes.
Yeah.
It's still basically the same disease. But these advocates issues are important. For instance, let's look at cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The number one cancer advocacy groups are breast cancer advocacy groups.
Right.
Look at Susan G. Komen. You know, that group has taken over. And basically, we don't have advocacy groups for uterine cancer and lymphoma groups. And it means something for raising money, raising awareness. It means something for how people feel about themselves. And the type 1s are up in arms. They want a different name. So what do you think?
What do I think of what the name should be?
Yeah, maybe they want us to come up with a name. We ought to think about a good
this
name
is
for them.
Spur of the moment for naming a disease.
A little pressure here.
I'm a radio analyst.
Right. You're a radio guy. You ought to be able to come. You're not a commercial guy. You ought to be able to come up with a name. So I don't want to put it lightly, but it's important to know that the type 1 diabetic is not at fault. Their pancreas is not producing insulin. The type 2 diabetic, many of them, if they lose weight, exercise, they can get by without meds, but it's a disease, if you will, of a different color.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, listener with us now in Millville, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
I have a question. It gets to be about the middle of winter, and I find myself on the depression level, getting very sad because of the weather. Now, just recently, we had a beautiful sunny day, and honestly, my attitude completely turned around. The minute the sun came out, it started shining, I got perky, I got happy. I work in retail, so I spend a lot of times indoors, and I was looking to see if that actually was, you know, what was affecting my attitude, if the weather is affecting my attitude.
Mm-hmm. What kind of retail job do you have?
Actually, I work in, I work at a specialty food factory, but we have a retail department. We actually make gluten-free pasta. We specialize in gluten-free pasta.
Well, I know Zorba can help you with this problem.
When you're inside, are there windows, by the way? Do you see
us? Yes, there's lots of windows.
Okay, so you find yourself looking at the windows, walking outside in the store.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No matter how cold it is, I tend to wander outside as much as possible.
Are you pretty much aware of when the sun goes down? You know, when the days get shorter, is that something you notice around Halloween?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you really, what do you notice around the beginning of December before the 21st when we've got the solstice? You notice how short the days are? You know, I mean, is that...
Uh-huh.
Do you seem to notice it more than people around you? You think, you know, do you think you pay more attention to it than your friends and buddies?
Yeah, most of the time I do. I tend to turn on a lot of lights if it's getting darker. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot more time, you know, turning on as much lights as I possibly can in a building.
In a building, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, so when do you notice the days get longer? The shortest day of the year is December 21st. When do you notice the days start to get longer? When do you...
Usually beginning of December, I start to really kind of realize it.
That it's short. And then when do you notice when the days start to lengthen a little bit?
It's usually like when you get that first, you know, spring-like day in the middle of winter is when I'm like, oh, hallelujah, the sun is out.
That's exactly it. You have seasonal affective disorder. That's what you have. And the cold weather, you know, it's a part of it, but it's not the main part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the light and the lack of light. It's almost like we're like plants. And it's the lack of light is really is a major issue. And it's a major issue for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
For many, many years, people just sort of, you know, poo-pooed it and say, well, you know, buck up. You know, the days are getting shorter and the days are getting longer. And there's really nothing there. And then somebody did some research and found out that it's common. And for some people, it's a lack of energy. And for others, it's frank depression. And then it's often manifested in, well, it's really too cold to go outside. And what they discovered was a lot of people have it in the South. You know, it's not even too cold to go outside. You know, they're upset in the South when, in Florida, when the weather gets to be 60, they go, well, it's too cold. Well, in fact, you know, 60 would be great in New Jersey in the middle of January. So there are a couple things you can do. First of all, the best natural way to take care of it is with a light box. And light boxes can be purchased online. We'll put a link to light boxes on our website, zorbapastor.org. And you can also make a light box. A light box is basically four fluorescent lights, shop lights that you typically get at a Home Depot or somewhere else. But they're four fluorescent light bulbs that are made. You put them in a box and you do it about one arm's length away from you. And that gives you 10,000 lumens. And that turns out to be the amount of light you need to change what is probably melatonin production from the pineal gland in the brain. And it's 20 minutes to 30 minutes a day, and it's not that you have to sit and look into the light box. It can be tangential to you. So in other words, you can be watching the computer, watching television, and as long as this bright light is on the side, it gets into the eyes and starts changing hormonal levels that basically are producing SAD. Now, SAD, in order to make it effective, you've got to really start it when the days start to get shorter. For some people, they started in September, around the middle of September. But for a lot of people, they started around Halloween, because that's when most people tend to notice it. So about a week before Halloween, they start it. And that's what I would recommend for you. Antidepressants, by the way, also work. Regular exercise can make a difference. You know, but for the most part, people often want to stay away from pills if they can.
Yeah. The other fix, the island of St. Martin has daylight pretty much all year long, and the temperatures are in the 80s all year long.
See, Tom is Tom is a St. Martin fan. That's what he likes to do, to sit on the beach. There you go.
That sounds awesome. I will meet you there.
That's a deal.
We'll be dinner, okay?
Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you, guys.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, it's time once again for our medical MythBuster. Today's myth deals with the old saying that if you don't eat, your stomach will shrink. Is this true? Or is it just an expression?
No, I don't think it's an expression. I think there's good evidence that it actually is true. And part of that's not that your stomach shrinks forever, but part of the research comes from a study that was done years ago. Not a big study, but they took obese men and women. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they had them eat fewer calories, 1,000 calories. That's not many calories. Small meals, 1,000 calories. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the study, they put a little latex balloon in to try to measure the size of the stomach. So how much did the balloon serve? Sort of expand could give an idea of measurement. And lo and behold, after 4 weeks on this diet, the stomach shrunk roughly one-third.
My.
In other words, it was one-third smaller.
Whoa.
Now, Then they did a companion study where they had people binge eat all the time. In other words, they, you know, eat as much as you can and then try to eat a little bit more. And lo and behold, you could actually expand the stomach to increase one-third above whatever its normal size would be. So what we eat on a regular basis can affect the size of our stomach at rest. Now, where does this play a role? Well, it plays a role in obesity. If we're used to the fact that our stomach is always bigger and we're just eating a lot to sort of keep it at that size, we're not satisfied until it reaches that size.
We don't feel full until the stomach is full.
Exactly. And if we start getting used to smaller meals, smaller plates, smaller portions over time, but it appears to take up to a month, the stomach actually will start to actually produce a smaller size. I mean, it's a pliable organ, so it can get bigger and smaller. So my recommendation, maybe when we're thinking about dieting, is that we have accustomed ourselves in America to eating larger and larger portions. And as a result, we become larger and larger and larger. And if we have smaller portions, our stomach will actually get used to a smaller size, will kind of shrink down, and we may be more satisfied with less food. And that's the key to losing weight.
Pretty interesting stuff. Well, don't shrink away from sending us a myth you'd like Zorba to bust. Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Brooklyn, New York. Hi.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Zorba. I'm 56 years of age, and I do have a family history of heart problems. The question I have for you is whether or not I should cut out red meat in my diet.
So you're a little bit worried about red meat. Tell me about the heart problem that you have in your family.
Well, I lost a brother with a massive heart attack at age 41 years of age. He was slightly overweight, and he was a smoker. I am not a smoker. I do exercise about 2 to 3 times a week. Like I mentioned, I am 56. I'm in relatively good health, but I am about 15 to 20 pounds overweight in my diet, which I'm trying to lose.
So what is your typical diet, sort of a diet filled with lots of red meat? I mean, what kind of a diet is your choice? What do you eat now?
Well, I'm mixing my diet up with mostly poultry about 2 to 3 times a week. And by the end of the week, I do have some beef. However, I'm trying to break away from consuming the beef product. There seems to be a controversy. Depends upon who you read or what you do read, whether or not red meat should be cut out of one's diet. What is your opinion, Doctor?
Well, I think it is important to reduce red meat, but let's look at your brother. Your brother died at a young age, in your 40s, massive heart attack. That's awful. So you look at that and you say, well, I probably don't have the right genes. What'd your brother do? He smoked cigarettes. Smoking cigarettes was, we know, is a major factor in premature heart attacks. So what do we do to reduce our chances of happening? Number one, quit smoking. Number two, start exercising, some regular exercise. If you need to have your blood pressure under control, get it under control. If you have diabetes, get it under control. If you have high cholesterol and you can't do it by diet, take a statin pill such as a Lipitor or Zocor. But the other thing is, how do you change your diet to make it more healthful? And I am a proponent of the Mediterranean diet. And the Mediterranean diet, the concept behind the Mediterranean diet is it's fish once or twice a week. It's some poultry products. It's lots of whole grains, fresh vegetables, fresh fruits. And meats and sweets are at the top of the Mediterranean pyramid. In other words, do not have large quantities of red meat. When you're going to have red meat, have it in judicious, smaller, moderate amounts and pick the red meat that you like to eat. In other words, you look at America and half the meat that we eat in America is hamburger. And I mean, I like a good burger like everyone else, but there are people who eat burgers every single day, and that's simply too much. So the answer is yes, you should cut out that red meat. Now, do you eat fish once or twice a week?
Not as often as I should. However, I'm going to incorporate a seafood in my diet after listening to you with your Mediterranean diet. I have to like the idea of the variety factor that you just mentioned.
It's a great idea. And we will put on our website, zorbapastor.org, we'll put some good information on the Mediterranean diet and the Mediterranean diet pyramid, which also is a good way to sort of think of food that you're eating. The fish connection is very interesting. People eat fish once or twice a week, regardless, as the grammarians would say, because irregardless isn't a word. I don't want the grammar police on me. But regardless, it turns out that fish is not only good to reduce heart disease, not only good to reduce stroke, but it's good for the brain. It may reduce the risk of Alzheimer's. So add fish to your diet and remove a little bit of that red meat, and you'll be tip-top.
Very good. Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Zorba.
Pleasure.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much for the call. And Zorba, speaking of the grammar police, before we get out of here for the week, it's time for a brief message from Deputy Jean of the Elton, Illinois branch of the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. She writes, I'm a huge fan of your show and love that you encourage your listeners to correct you when they think you are mistaken about something. During a previous discussion about the drug STD versus STP, you were referring to those abbreviations as acronyms. But they really aren't acronyms. They are just abbreviations. Acronyms are actually abbreviations for terms that make their own words, such as MAD, M-A-D-D, NATO, and SCUBA. Just thought there should be some clarification. You are the greatest.
Well, first of all, I really appreciate the fact that she said, I am the greatest. That's the most wonderful thing. But wait a minute.
The rest of it you don't appreciate at all.
Wait a second. I know RADAR is an acronym. Okay, I understand RADAR is an acronym. But what is NATO? NATO doesn't make up a word.
Yeah.
NATO, what is it? It's an abbreviation.
Well, no. NATO is the word NATO. It's an abbreviation for...
Yeah, North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
Yes, but there has to be a word from the letters to have it an acronym.
It's got an STP. I'm just using the initials. Oh,
stiff.
I never...
Stiff.
Yeah, I got it.
That's not really a word.
I got it. Thank you, Deputy. Thank you again for correcting my grammar. My high school and elementary school teacher, Miss Schutte, would be proud.
If you'd like to join the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police, which has no acronym... Send your citations in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Take care, Tom, and stay well.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adam Battlecat Friedrich produces this hour with help from our technical director, Brad Cringer Colbert. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0226Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.